Dr. Henderson, can you follow up with what's happened with this man?
Sure. Well, back in November of 2004, I didn't have all the options we have today. So I talked with the patient at length about what his wishes were. Observing him without treatment was not an option. He was nervous without cancer. Once the cancer was back, there was no way in the world he was going to do anything that didn't involve treatment. I talked with him about high-dose interleukin-2. My experience has not been good. I didn't encourage him to do that. He didn't really want to go someplace for high-dose IL-2. We were preparing to open the Targets trial, randomizing to sorafenib versus placebo in the second-line setting. So knowing that he had to have failed or become intolerant to a cytokine to be eligible for that trial, I gave him interferon. He had 3.5 months of interferon with an ultimate dose of 9 million units 3 times a week. And at the end of 3.5 months, had stable disease, but had what the patient and I considered intolerance to interferon. He was extremely depressed. He was not sleeping. He lost about 10 pounds, had anorexia, and I thought that constituted sufficient intolerance to take him off interferon. And I entered him onto the randomized trial of sorafenib versus placebo, and he actually had a minor response, about a 20% shrinkage of his 3 lesions, which lasted 14 months up until about a month ago.
What kind of side effects or toxicity did he experience?
He had virtually none. His hypertension remained well controlled without changing his medicine. He had no hand, foot, or rash, minimal GI symptoms. He said he had more frequent bowel movements, but no real diarrhea.
He told me an interesting story. Maybe you could relate it to the group in terms of him calling the NCI.
The trial was unblinded in May of 2005, but he was so nervous about being on placebo, since this was a placebo-controlled trial, he was trying to go around me and call the NCI, call the trial sponsors, and make sure he was getting active drug. He didn't want to be on a placebo trial, which is a real issue in the States regardless.
But that was while he was being treated.
Yeah, he actually was on active drug, but he didn't know it. And
right.
Since he had no side effects virtually, he thought he was getting placebo.
I just thought that was great. a fascinating commentary on this new generation of agents, that the patient was nervous that he was getting a placebo.
We had the very same experience in Mark Retain's randomized discontinuation trial. It was a 60-patient about. And one of my patients who went on that randomized discontinuation trial was not sure, but he had anticipated it. I'd told him about the randomized trial coming up. He had deliberately underdosed himself and saved a sample of pills so that if he didn't think he was getting sorafenib, he would be able to take it surreptitiously. I mean, this guy's a lawyer and sort of knew what he was doing. It turned out that he could tell by hair loss. That's how he knew. He had complete hair loss with sorafenib. And so he figured that if he didn't get sorafenib in the randomized discontinuation, that his hair would grow back. That's the sort of thing you get with the placebo-controlled trials.
I'm just kind of curious, trying to tease out from you all, you know, how often do you see that with sorafenib versus sunitinib, the patient just coasts through it?
We had 23 or 24 patients on the same trial that you were speaking about, the sorafenib versus placebo trial. And we tried to guess who was getting what. And the doctors were wrong in half the cases. We were well blinded. So I think, at least in that setting, and that was before we really became very attuned to some of the side effects, some of the nuances of the side effects of sorafenib. I think now you look for these in a much more intensive way and you find them. But at that point, we couldn't tell. We had people who had hand-foot syndromes who were getting placebo. So it was a very strange thing. That's why placebo-controlled trials are so interesting and so valuable in the evaluation of an oral agent like this.
Is it just as common with sunitinib to have patients coast through?
We've never done a placebo comparison. They did it with a GIST study, and they have the data there comparing it to placebo. But in renal cancer, I must say that most everybody has some side effect, whether it's mild or such.
But I mean, enough that it interferes quality, like, for example, fatigue.
No, I don't think it interferes with quality of life. I don't think you can say that the drug really impairs functioning for these people. I think they can get through this. It's not that level of side effects.
What I usually say is about a third of people have enough toxicity that you're fiddling around and adjusting their doses. You may get them on a lower dose or a couple of day holiday or something like that, and then you get to a plateau where they can function with both drugs.
And do you find that people feel differently when the 2 weeks they're off sunitinib than when they're on for the four?
Yes.
And what do they tell you?
I think mostly the fatigue. They just don't feel as tired. But they're also nervous that the tumor may grow back in those
but
2 weeks.
We find patients that adjust their own medications. This is going to happen with these oral drugs. They will, when they start to develop some of these symptoms, hold off or not take the drug that day and take it the next day. This is commonly seen now. So they're kind of treating themselves at this point. And they're doing it by using their side effects as a measure. Some of them are concerned about recurrence of symptoms and disease growth so that they won't do it. But there's a segment out there who are clearly adjusting their own drugs.